Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Anything to lose. I have no secrets to hide. I could just be blunt and people could judge it however they judge it.
From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Truth and Justice. This week, as you guys know, last week we did the closing argument in Jody's case, and we're not done with the season yet. There's a few things that I have up in the air right now that I'm waiting to land before I figure out how exactly we're going to do the final close. I got some people I've reached out to. And before we wrap up the season, I want to make sure that we hear again from Jody, and you can hear directly from Jody how this has affected them. And talk about where we're going next. But in the meantime, why we still got those balls in the air, we're going to continue to put content out about stuff that's relevant in the true crime space right now. And I know one thing that we have been talking about relentlessly on our Patreon pregames for the last 3-4 weeks, been a hot topic of conversation pretty much everywhere, was the trial of Richard Allen in the Delphi murders case. This week, while we're coming into a holiday week, you guys are going to be hearing this just after Thanksgiving. Hopefully you guys have all had a great holiday for those that celebrate. And so I wanted to sit down with my buddy, the other Bob, my buddy Bob Mata, who Bob sat, for those of you that don't know, I'm sure most of you do, Bob had a front row seat at that trial every single day and was there every day. If you want a blow-by-blow, play-by-play analysis of the entire trial in real time, I suggest you go check out his Defense Diaries YouTube channel and his podcast feed. Bob worked his ass off for weeks at that trial. I mean, we were just talking about it before we started the show. That he was getting up early, getting there, taking detailed notes for the whole trial, going back to his Airbnb, doing a 3-hour live stream, getting a little bit of sleep, getting up, doing it again 6 days a week for that whole time. So for me, I want to kind of talk about some of the bullet points of what happened in that trial. I have some questions, and I just really want to hear firsthand. You know, we've had all these discussions about the things Bob said. Well, I wanted to, I'm lucky enough to be able to get Bob in the room with me and have a conversation with Bob so I can ask him those questions. So first of all, Bob Mata, thank you for joining us.
Always, Bob. Good to see you, man. How you been?
Oh, real good. I'm kind of finally starting to slow down a little bit too. Not because I was at a trial every week, just because we're coming into Thanksgiving break at school. We're reaching the end of a season. Things are starting to slow down a little bit.
Breathe, take a breath. Breathe a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Same over here, man. Looking forward to the Thanksgiving break, heading down to Arkansas. That's where my Irish Scottish ass is all from, down south down there. So I'm going to go see my mom and my brother, and my uncle had passed in the spring. So he was kind of my ride or die uncle. So we're going to celebrate him, but I'm looking forward to it, man. Nice. Little family time, quality family time, you know?
Yeah. I've got some heavy Scottish roots in my blood too. And in our family, when somebody passes away, it's not a sad Right. A sad gathering afterward.
That's correct. It's a celebration of life, you know?
Yep.
It's the way it should be. It's the way it should be. You know, if you've lived a full life, you know, I mean, that should be a celebration. You know, I mean, if we lose somebody too soon, a little different, but, for those who have lived a good full life, shit, celebrate it, you know?
Absolutely. All right. So let's get into this trial. Let's start with this. And I know we've got, like I said, there are hours and hours and hours of Bob breaking all down all this stuff in heavy detail. But can we first go through, from you being there firsthand, the state, the kind of the bullet points of the state's case against Richard Allen? What evidence did they present as kind of, if you were to bullet point when they were writing out their outline for their case, what did they have to try to prove that Richard Allen was guilty?
A video, unspent casing, and confessions. It's that simple.
That's the entire, and how long did it take them to present that case?
I want to say just shy of 2 weeks.
And that was, when did they, now, one thing that I've been wondering about forever and ever and ever, ever since we first saw that little 1 second clip of the video of Bridge Guy, at the trial, my understanding is they played that full video in its entirety.
They did.
With that, my speculation always was that obviously when we hear guys down the hill, that's probably after the phone is like in Libby's pocket and we probably never heard any more. Because, you know, it's probably not anything anybody wants to hear where you just have a dark screen and you're hearing some sounds. Can you tell us, since you were there and actually got to see it,
yeah,
what was on the rest of that video and how long was it?
So the full video was 43 seconds. And so the first time they showed it, okay, it was the original, meaning that they had not, it was not the enhanced version. So I'll go through it, but we end up seeing three different versions of the same video. So the first time they play, we can all sense it's coming, right? We know it's coming. So you're sitting there. It's a video that we've been waiting to see for 7 years. All of us have followed this case. So you're sitting there, rapt attention. You're trying to catch up. You're trying to suck it all in. They've got about an 85-inch screen in the middle of the well of the courtroom. All right. So that's it. So this is not a modern courtroom, you know, where you have like the big screens, like, this ain't it. So we're all like, I was fortunate on Kathy Allen's side. Like, I had a very good view of that monitor that they had that was closer to the state's table. So, as you know, you typically have, you know, you'll have the family sitting behind the state's counsel table on that side of the victims. And then you'll have the defendant's family sitting behind defendant's counsel table. So like the people that were on the family side, the victim's family side, had a really terrible view of that monitor throughout the entire trial. So when they play this thing, man, you're looking at it and you're trying to like suck it all in, right? You're looking, I'm like, oh my God, like I want to see all of it. And it's like, when it ended, I'm like, whoa, I'm like that. I turned to, I forget who was next to me. I'm like, was that 43 seconds? There's no way that was 43 seconds. Because I'm looking at it, first time I see it, I don't see anybody behind Abby at all. Like, not like I didn't see anybody. This is the way it goes. It starts with Libby holding the phone. She's got kind of like a long shot of Abby walking across the trestle or the Monon High Bridge, getting closer. Like, she's beyond where the water is under the bridge. So if you've ever been out to the bridge, it's about 865 feet long from beginning to end of the trestle proper, which is a trestle is just a old railroad bridge that goes over a body of water,
right,
typically. So, but it's about 865. So she looks to be beyond where the water would still be, where the creek would be under the bridge. She'd be over the part of the bridge that's on solid land. And she looks to me to be about 10 to 12 yards back. But, you know, it's hard to tell with an iPhone. It's like you've taken a picture like at an event.
Right.
And, you know, you're like really 40 to 50 yards away. But when you take a picture, it looks like it's 100.
So just real quick to start with, that video began. It wasn't, she didn't pick the phone up and start filming, or did she? Because she saw Bridge Guy coming. She picked up, she was just filming Abby.
It seemed to be, but I mean, the argument could be made that she saw this dude behind her and thought something like, I don't know that person that was walking behind her at that point would have given any kind of indication that she needed to start filming it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not as if there were not other people out at that on the bridge and the trails that day. Like, it wasn't like there was no one out there. like this concept that like he was the only one out there is just incorrect. I mean, we know that, you know, depending on what you want to believe, you know, various people saw various people.
Right.
So you get this shot of Abby coming towards Libby and she's looking down. You have to look down when you're crossing this trestle. It's like old railroad ties. You know, there's missing ties in some sections. Some are just completely, you know, eroded. So it's like, this isn't the kind of thing that you can just be walking around down the street, you know, head up. You got to be looking down where you're walking. Everybody who crosses it has to. It's like, it's one of those things like, hey, did you ever cross the bridge type thing? Mm-hmm. Like, it's an occasion when you cross the bridge. For some people, they've never done it because it's terrifying. It's 65 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
There's no railings. If you lose your footing, you're done, theoretically. So at some point, so I'd say the first 3-4 seconds, it is, you're seeing Abby. I'm looking, I'm like, where's the dude behind her? Like, why can't I see the dude? So, and then all of a sudden the phone drops. So the camera is faced at the ground. Mm-hmm. So you can see the gravel and the tracks. And then Libby's talking like real soft. She's like, see, here's the gravel. And then at some point, like a few seconds later, the camera comes back up. You can see Abby kind of run by her, like in a like a little, like not fast, you know, not fast, obviously, because she's on the tracks, but you could see her pick up her pace and she walks past Libby. Mm-hmm. And then the camera goes down again. And then she shoots over to the side of the tracks where it's all kind of that quartz, those big whitish type quartz rocks.
So are they to where the trestle has got back onto land now?
I wouldn't say they're still on the, because remember the tracks run long beyond the trestle.
Right.
So this is like it ends where they consider it to be down the hill. So it goes much beyond that. It's probably about another, I don't know, like 300 feet, maybe more. So, and you hear her say, she says something to the effect of, see, there's no path down here. And then all of a sudden you hear, and you can hear them crunching on the rocks. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, so it never goes in her pocket. So then you hear guys down the hill and then the video ends. Like that's at the very end of the video, the very end.
And it's a total of 43 seconds.
So that's the first time we saw it. We only get to see these videos 4 times total. Like, so it's like when you see them, like you're trying to take it all in. So then when they put on their guy who enhanced the videos, we see this enhanced version, which is much clearer. Like at this point, I can see the dude behind Abby.
How far behind her is he?
Like I'd say 10 yards.
Okay.
Maybe, you know, maybe like 30 feet. Mm-hmm. Seeing it looks to be to me. And then it's kind of the same thing. The sound's better. Now, they put Liggett on the stand to show the super enhanced, which they said they stabilized it. Mm-hmm. I have no idea as I sit here how they made this video. It's like when these things make it out to the public, it's going to be a whole nother layer of conspiracy theorist bullshit coming out with these things, because they just, like, I don't know if they were able to access the back camera, because you see shit in the super enhanced, the stabilized one, that you do not see in either the original or the enhanced one. Okay. So, because at that point, that's when you really see the camera come back up and Abby run past her. Mm-hmm. And you know, and Liggett's there, like he says, I listened to this shit for like 1,000 times. He's like, and I always wore headphones. And he says that he hears Abby say, is he still behind me? And then something about a gun. Okay. Now I don't hear that. And I certainly don't hear a gun rack. Mm-hmm. So, but he gets on the stand, testifies that's what he hears. No, like you cannot hear it with your naked ear.
Okay.
Now, does that mean that you cannot hear it with headphones? I don't know. Like I'll have to listen to it when it finally makes it out to the world with headphones on. How they were able to do what they did with that enhanced thing is very interesting to me. It's a, I mean, there's a lot of people out there. And I really, Bob, I try my damnedest not to get sucked into conspiracy shit. I really do. Like, I really, really do. You know, like in this case, I don't think it was a conspiracy. I just think they got the wrong guy. I think that they believe that they got the right guy.
Yeah.
I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, they have to be, you know, you're never going to get the state limping into a courtroom and being like, you know, maybe, you know, what I
mean? Right.
Like they're always going to be confident that they've got the guy. They're going to always put that face on. But I mean, just when you kind of look at this case in the totality and how it was tried, I want nothing more than Richard Allen to be the guy. Like, and that is like 100% honesty. I don't have a stake in Richard Allen not being the guy. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, yeah. That's not my thing. It's like, I'm looking at the way that this process went and I'm looking at the evidence that they had. And I'm looking at the fact that what they did to this American citizen in that prison for 13 months to extract these confessions, which are bullshit. I want to trust this verdict, but they made it impossible for me as a lawyer to trust it. Like any lawyer I talk to is like, nah, man, yeah. Like there's something off about it.
Yeah.
Just the way they went about it.
I want to hold up for just a second because I want to get to all that, but I want to try to keep us on pace where we're at now because I really want to make sure we understand the video. So the part in the video that we saw that was released to the public, that couple of seconds of bridge guy walking, where was that in that? Did that come from the original section where in the undoctored version? In the original where they were you said they were showing Abby and he was behind her, but you couldn't even see her.
I could not see him in the original. That's what I'm saying. That doesn't mean that he wasn't there, but in that 43 seconds when you're watching the original, yeah. I cannot see him.
But is that where they pulled that? Was it like a really zoomed in view of that original? Is that, or was it later when she then put the camera back up? Like at what point in the video was the section that we've been seeing for these last?
I think it's from the enhanced, because like I'm telling you, man, I don't know what they did to this thing, but I did not. And I asked multiple people. I'm like, did you see Bridge Guy like in the original, like this dude behind, like in the original? And people were like, no. And then you got people like the Murder Sheet, like, oh yeah, I saw him. I'm like, yeah, sure you did. You know, you're writing a book. Like you've got a vested interest in this guy being guilty. You've been, you know, so it's like, I'm trying to ask people that objectively are just looking at this case instead of having an agenda. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't see him. So I think it had to come from the enhanced. It had to.
Well, but what I'm trying to figure out is at what point in the video. So you said the video starts with she's filming Abby walking.
Right.
And she's a little ways out past her. And then she films the gravel. And then she picks it back up and Abby's kind of running past her.
Yeah. And I don't even know if that's what I'm saying. I don't even know that she picked it up. It seems like, I don't know if there's a way that people that know a lot more about phones than I do, that you're able, when you're in your camera, if you know, I'm assuming that your lens is right. You know, you have the ability to flip your lens. I'm wondering if they have the ability to be able to access what the camera saw, you know, from the reverse.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's the only explanation I can come up with. As to how they got this footage that clearly did not exist when I watched the original.
Okay.
It's really hard to explain because I can't explain it. Like, I don't know how they did it. Like, I was asking everybody. I'm like, am I nuts? Or was that a completely, like, are we seeing shit that we had no way to see when we watched the original?
So was at least the sequence the same in the original? Where it's Abby walking, gravel, Abby going past her, gravel. And then that's it. Does the phone ever show anything up again, or is that last?
No, you never get a close up of this dude. You know, I mean, you cannot, in the one portion that you can see him, you can't see his mouth moving. Like there's no way to prove that person said those words.
So when you hear guys down the hill, the camera's not pointing at this person.
No.
Right. So it sounds like, and this is what I'm trying to get to, is the little video that we've seen of the couple of him taking a couple of steps, that would be obviously from an enhanced version, but also that would be from the very first few seconds when Abby's way out and then he's another 30 feet behind her. Is that when that section would have come from?
Like, No, that's what I'm saying. I think whenever they did whatever they did, where they're able to get it back up, and you see kind of Abby like hustling past Libby, like you catch a shot of him. He's still a ways back.
That's where it comes from. Okay.
That's where it has to have come from. But like, and again, Bob, they showed it to us fucking three times, dude, you know? So it's like, you're trying to soak it all in. Like I wish we could look at it a million times.
Or in slow motion or anything like
that. All of it. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Frame by frame by frame, we'd figure it out. And eventually it's going to have to make it out. It's put into evidence. There's no way that they're going to be able to stop that shit from coming out. It's going to have to come out to the world. And when we're at that point, we're all going to look at it, you know? So in my estimation, it had to come from that point, because whenever, whatever happens with the Cameron, where they stabilize it and it comes back up and you see Abby hustle past Libby, that's when you catch him. He still looks to be a distance back. And then it goes to the gravel again, over to the side of the tracks. And you hear Libby, oh, there's, she's like whispering. It's like she's close. She's closest to the mic. In the time that guy that looks to be still 10 to 15 feet, not yards away, like why you're hearing him that closely, like the concept that there couldn't have been somebody behind Libby is ridiculous, because there absolutely could have been somebody behind her. Who was she talking to when she's whispering about the gravel and saying there's no path down there, as Abby's still approaching her?
How many seconds in your estimation is there between her saying, look, here's the gravel, there's no path down here, and guys down the hill?
A second.
So it's right after that.
It's like as soon as you, yeah, it's like maybe a second and a half from my memory.
So it seems like
the last thing that you hear is guys down the hill, black, fade to black. That's it.
And so it seems like if she's talking about the gravel and this and that, that she did she seem like she was already concerned about something at that point?
I mean, why is she showing the gravel at all and like describing what she's seeing? Like it's weird. Like
did they put any evidence in of other videos she took that day, or just that one?
That was the only video she took.
Because I wonder if she's, you know, with this crossing the bridge is like this, like rite of passage type of thing. If there was more of those types of videos of her, like, okay, this is us on this side of the bridge. You know what I mean? Something like that.
Yeah, no.
Something you put on a snap story. Quick, short shots.
Yeah, no series of videos like that at all.
That they released.
Right. Well, no. No, they went through everything on her phone. We know everything. And the biggest mystery of this case in terms of that phone is the picture, the solo picture of Abby walking across the bridge. We've all seen it online.
Yeah.
It's like she's got her jacket on. Her hands look to be in her pocket. She's looking down. We've all seen that they have no idea where that picture came from. It was not on Libby's phone. It was not taken on Libby's phone. Like that fucking picture came from somewhere else. Like their expert had to admit that it could have been somebody else that had accessed Libby's account, because it was posted from Libby's account, but it was not on her phone in any way, shape, or form. When they looked at the cellular extraction, there was no evidence that photo was ever taken on that phone. It's fucking crazy, dude. I'm just telling you, when this case is not going away. I warned everybody about this case, and I warned everybody about the record that Gull was keeping. This thing is going to be litigated to shit. And people are going to be digging into it way, way harder than they were, because once this evidence makes it out to the world and we're all digging in on it, dude, there's a lot there. There is a lot there that is unexplained in this case. And it's like they want it to be this simple story with this simple timeline and with these confessions, you know, that came from a guy who was literally psychologically tortured.
Truth and Justice is sponsored by First Form. Now is the time to really focus in on your health. Every year about this time, people get that F it attitude and gain 15 pounds over the holidays. Then in January, they make resolutions and try to undo the damage they've done. It's depressing, and it doesn't have to be that way. You can take control of your nutrition today with First Form. First Form has been my key to success in losing over 70 pounds and keeping it off. I use their app to track my macros, consulted with my coach, and have been using a variety of First Form supplements consistently all along the way. My absolute favorite First Form product that I just can't live without is my MicroFactor Daily Nutrient Packs. I pop open a pack every morning, and I genuinely don't feel right if I don't take them every day. I actually forgot to pack my MicroFactor for my trip to the Berkshires last month, and by noon on day one, I was feeling it. I felt bloated and tired and, well, gross. But thankfully, Zach's wife, Michelle, came to the rescue because she remembered hers and she let me borrow a pack. It is crazy how much of a difference it makes. The multi-factor packet gives you 6 important nutrients all in one gulp. Inside your pack, you'll find antioxidants, a multivitamin, a probiotic to help with that bloating. It's got CoQ10 to help your joints and brain and heart, essential fatty acids, including omega-3s, and you even get your fruits and veggies, all in one little handful of capsules, neatly packaged in daily packets. It's super convenient and super effective. Plus, it's a great bargain and has a 110% money-back guarantee. Now, if you go to your local pharmacy and look for a month's supply of all these supplements, the price tag will be close to $200. Instead, you can get everything delivered in convenient daily packs through First Form for under $65 a month if you subscribe. Take control of your nutrition today at firstform.com/truth, and you'll get free shipping on any order over $75. And if you're a new customer, they'll email you a link and let you try out the First Form app for free for a month. First Form, absolutely, without question, has changed my life. I started 2 years ago. I've lost 70 pounds. I've kept it off. I feel great, and you can feel great too. I promise you it's worth it. Check out First Form now at the number one, STPHORM.com/truth. That's firstform.com/truth, and you'll get free shipping for any order over $75, and new customers will get a link to try out the app for free for a month.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with washablesofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
You know, it's like, Bobby, you deal with this shit. I mean, in terms of somebody who is arrested, who's never been in the system, who has no background whatsoever, and they take him after 5 years of this case going cold, and all of a sudden they, and like, dude, wait till you see the first two interviews with Richard Allen. You want to talk about a guy who they fucking ran the read technique on him. Holman went into him so hard. This guy never flinched. Within the first minute and a half of him in the first interview on October 13th, because this is how it went. Interview one, October 13, with Steve Mullins and Tony Liggett.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's when they make the first run at him. The second one is October 26, which is the date he's taken into custody. And that's when Jerry Holman takes the run at him. Mullins does the read technique, but he's way more low-key about it than Holman is. But within the first, I'd say, minute and a half to 2 minutes of that interview with Mullins and Liggett, Allen's like, he's like, hey, you know, it's I understand you guys want to close this case. This case is, it's like everybody wants this case closed, but I'm starting to get the feeling that you're looking for a fall guy. And I'm telling you, I'm not your fucking fall guy. like he sensed it like immediately. So by the end of that interview, you know, they're coming at him. And it, dude, you'll get the sense of it. Like you can only tell by watching it, right? You can only tell by his tone, his intonations, you know, his like what he's doing. Is he fidgeting? He's not doing any of that. You know, he's making eye contact, like all the body language shit that you look at. I got no sense of that this is a guy who committed this brutal double homicide who has just found out that the jig is up. Like, yeah. No sense at all. And when they take the second run at him, it's unbelievable. You know, because we all know Supreme Court of the United States has said that cops can lie.
Yeah.
And you know, in these situations, they can say whatever the fuck they want, short of, hey, if you tell us you did this, we're gonna cut you loose. You know, just confess. They can't.
Yeah.
Can't lie about end results that could never happen. So, mm-hmm. But they can lie about what evidence they have, whatever evidence they claim that they have. So the second time, you know, Holman's like, we got the bullet. It's matched. Okay. We've got our analyst matched it to your gun. Like you're fucking done, dude. We also had a voice analyst from the FBI. We know it's your voice. She matched your voice to that voice on the phone. So he tells Allen these things and Allen's like, and he's really focusing on the bullet,
uh-huh.
Right? The round. And Allen's like, I cannot explain something that's impossible. Like you're asking me to explain something that I can't explain. It's like, I was out there. I didn't have my gun. I didn't drop that bullet. It's not my bullet. Like, how do you want me to explain that to you? Like, how do I prove a negative? I can't, you know what I mean? He just kept saying it. It's like, how can I explain something that's impossible? And then they go into the confession. So they set it up with the two things where Allen just never caved. And the final move that they made is that they had already made the run at Kathy, who was sitting outside, because they had gone to the mm-hmm. police station. And kids, if the police ever call you and tell you you can come pick up your property from the police station, do not go there without an attorney, because you are not walking out of that police station. So they said that come and get your car, because they had mm-hmm. taken the car. They had, you know, done the full forensic examination of the vehicle. They found nothing in there. In 5 years, like a bloody crime scene, like this kind of murder, you're just not getting rid of every ounce of biological fluid. Like there's going to be something somewhere. They're going to find it. So when they get there, you know, under the guise that, you know, you come to get your car, they get Allen in the room. Holman goes hard at him. In the interim, they're telling Kathy that her husband's the guy who did it. And this is the evidence we have. We've matched the round to his gun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know how to tell you this. So they send her in the room as the last ditch effort to break him. Because like right before they send Kathy in, he's like, are you going to do this to your fucking family? Is that what you're going to do? You're going to be a fucking coward? You're going to put your wife and your daughter through this shit? That's what you're going to fucking do? That's what you're going to do, you know, like screaming at him. And so then they send Kathy in, and Kathy's a puddle. She's like, you know, she's sitting there and she's like, how did your bullet get there? How did your round get there? He's like, babe, he's like, I can't explain it. Like, I have no idea. He's like, but you know me, you know, all the shit that you'd be saying, you know, yeah. I'm not capable of this, you know? So they sent her in there as the last ditch to where he sets it up like you're gonna destroy your whole family's life instead of just owning up to this, and you're gonna put them through all this bullshit, all the trial, everything, and like he never caves with Kathy either, man. And then after they play those, and those were probably about an hour and a half total, maybe closer to two with both videos, and then they start going into the confessions, like the recorded calls between Alan and his wife and then his mom.
So let's back up to, they played the video as far as that trial. The next was this bullet, and this is the one that we heard, what, a year and a half, almost 2 years ago when they arrested him, that they had this shell casing that they, at the time, said was a match to his gun. First of all, you must have learned in the trial, where was that unspent round found?
They claim that it was found about 6 inches away from Abby's foot.
So down where the bodies were found, not up by the bridge.
Correct. So that's like, and it's not buried, but it's like, it's nestled. I'd call it nestled in the leaves, kind of just like, not like they didn't have to dig it up. Like there was like, oh, it was buried. It was like, it was nestled in the leaves. It was partially visible. Like when they ran, it was like the alternative light source. And the one dude that wasn't wearing the goggles or the glasses, he says, hey, wait, go back over here, because he saw a glimmer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then problem with their chain of custody is there's, you know, the next, you never see the bullet. You can never see like the actual bullet, the projectile. All you could see is the head stamp and the primer. That's all you could fucking see. So they never, like when they pick it up and take it into evidence, like you never see a picture of them holding the entire bullet up so that you can see it, so that you know you're looking at the same bullet at trial as you're looking at.
So when they're documenting the crime scene, which is done in the same way as a document fire scene, so you stop broad, and if there's, in for me, like if I had a item of evidence that I'm going to collect, I take a wide shot,
right,
a closer shot, a zoomed in shot of it untouched where it's at,
right.
Then you clear everything away from it, get a real close shot, usually with a scale next to it. And then, like you said, then you pick it up and take, like, this is the full thing. So you can see step by step. So in this case, they just have the long shot of it in place, and then that's it.
That's it. There's no chain of custody of it. There's no, like, you're not watching the steps of the process at all. You never see that happen. And their position was, well, you know, if there was any kind of biological fluids on it, if there was any prints on it, if there was any DNA, like anything. Like, we didn't want to touch it. Well, like, you had to touch it to fucking pick it up.
Yeah, you put it in a bag.
Right. So, like, you know, it's like they just didn't have any kind of explanation for it. I mean, the one takeaway that anybody who is being intellectually honest about this investigation is it was terrible. Like, it just from beginning to end.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like we could spend 10 hours talking about this stuff, man. Like, so. No, and I don't think it's a police conspiracy that they switched the bullets. I don't. I don't think that they were able to actually match it to Richard Allen's gun. And that brings us to Susan Oberg, who was their firearms. Are you ready to go there yet?
Yeah. So this is the thing that just enraged me when the trial started. So we had, all the way back 2 years ago, they get the warrant to go arrest him because they had this unspent casing. And they had a firearms analyst look at the tool marks, and they say it came from Richard Allen's gun. Now, we talked about, Zach and I talked about a lot all the way back then. We're like, I mean, that kind of tool mark analysis is bordering right on junk science. In some places it is, to begin with.
Right.
But then, so everything that happens from there and beyond was all built around the idea that this bullet casing came from Richard Allen's gun.
Correct.
And then, now, can you explain what happened at trial? What did we learn at trial when that analyst came up and explained what she actually found?
Nothing. It was unbelievable. So you're sitting there as she gets on the stand. You know, she's been working for the ISP lab for a long time. She's like, I've never gotten one wrong. Like, she's like, I'm never wrong. I'm like, I'm never wrong. So when she, and then they're trying to explain, because when you're talking about the process, all right, and they're trying to explain the difference between, you know, all the parts of the casing itself, you know, that this is the primer, this is the head stamp, you know, this is the projectile. In terms of the parts that were the tools that we're talking about, you've got your extractor, your ejector, and, you know, kind of like the barrel face, the part where, you know, in the actual chamber where the beginning of the barrel is, that kind of U-shaped piece.
Yeah.
So she's like, those are the three tools that we're talking about with an ejected round that hasn't, you know, that was just cycled through the gun that wasn't fired. All right. And they put a picture up, right? And the whole time she's like, but I don't want anybody looking at the picture, because the picture is just one of, like, it's a microcosm of everything that I was looking at when I made my analysis. So I'm like, well, why didn't you put on like a series of, like, you know, because she's got her comparison microscope picture.
Yeah.
And they're like, there's three ejector marks on the head, on the head stamp. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Which means that that round had been ejected on three separate occasions. Okay. And they all look like they're deep grooved marks. Okay.
Yeah.
Those are what they would consider to be subclass. You cannot use subclass to make an actual sufficient agreement. You can't say that they're, because it goes, you're going to have just your classification, which is just general. You use subclass to rule other weapons out, saying, okay, well, it can't be a Smith and Wesson, because that's the mark that Smith and Wessons make.
Right.
Or you can narrow it down to certain weapons that make similar marks. What you're looking for are, you need the fine marks, not what they call the gross marks. So the gross marks are the deeper marks. We never even see what she's saying was sufficient agreement. Like there is no evidence. It was literally like, trust me, you're just going to have to trust me. I had my work validated by my boss. And he came to the same thing, same conclusion. There was sufficient agreement. They're not allowed to use the word match.
Right.
Right. So it's the term of art is sufficient agreement. So the problem with it was that they had no evidence of her showing her work. How did you reach that conclusion? Mm-hmm. It blew my mind, man. Like I had never seen anything like it. But I know from trying cases, and I said it going into this thing, I'm like, and I probably said it the last time we talked, to a jury, when you get somebody that works for the state police that's been in a lab and they say that it's a match or sufficient agreement, there are going to be jurors that are going to say, that's it then.
Yeah.
They're not going to critically think about it. And it doesn't matter that the defense is going to put on an expert and say, there isn't sufficient agreement and she didn't show her work, you know, and they're going to focus on the fact that he didn't go and examine the actual round himself and that he didn't do his own analysis on it. So, I mean, ultimately it's going to have a lot of weight with the jury, which it did. Like when it comes out, when the jurors finally start talking, if they ever do, you know, it's going to be the round in the confessions that's like, it can't be anything else.
Well, with the round too, though, what I was hearing coming out of this from the people that weren't there that were kind of hearing it kind of third hand was that when the firearms expert testified, she said that she was unable to create those tool marks by ejecting the shell.
Correct.
That she could only correct them or she could only replicate them if she actually fired the round. Is that correct? Is that accurate?
It's absolutely accurate. So, and that's actually the biggest takeaway. So, she used 10 test rounds that she had, like, just in a, like, she's got a big bag or box of test rounds. So the first thing she did, and she did 10 of them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So she did four where she tried to cycle it. And if you guys know anything about weapons, you know, if you get your magazine up there, okay, the first time that you rack your gun, it's going to the extractor is going to pull the bullet out of the magazine and place it in the chamber. And then if you rack it again, say that you went out during that day and you like to keep, you know, if it's a, you know, conceal and carry state and you're like, I like to have one in the chamber just in case, God forbid, you know, and you got it in your holster and you got your gun that morning, you racked it, you got that round up in the chamber, and then you get home and you're a, you know, gun safety matters to you. You're like, all right, I'm gonna get that out. So you then rack it a second time, that'll eject that round out. So she did that process four times, okay? And she could not make sufficient enough markings on any of those four rounds where she cycled the round out of the weapon to make any kind of comparison. The markings weren't significant enough. So she then fires six rounds. And at that point, on one of them, one of those six, she claims that she was able to make sufficient agreement. And you know, Bob, that, you know, it's a completely different process that you're talking about, because when the firing pin hits the primer and ignites the gunpowder in the casing, it causes pressure. The casing expands, which is what forces the projectile to fly out of the bullet, out of the casing.
Right.
It's a completely different thing. So it's like trying to explain it to people in a way that, like, that it's incredulous that that was even allowed into evidence is unbelievable.
I mean, I would break it down like this very simply. So what we're trying to do is we're saying that this mark, we know for a fact that the mark on that shell casing came from it being ejected out of a gun without being fired. When they tried to do the same thing with Richard Allen's gun, it did not make that mark.
Correct.
So then she fires six rounds, which is irrelevant in my opinion, because the round wasn't fired. So you're not replicating anything that actually happened on the scene. And out of that, only one out of the six could have been sufficient agreement, to which she didn't show any work to actually confirm that.
You don't even see what mark she's talking about. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're looking at this side by side from the comparison, Mike, where you see these three gross marks. And remember, there's fine marks and gross marks. Fine marks are like, those are what they call individual characteristics. That's what you need in order to make sufficient for an analyst to make sufficient agreement, saying, okay, these fine marks that are individual to that weapon only that weapon can make those marks. And we never saw them. They were never put up on a display for the jury. Like, okay, you see these very minute marks here? These are the matches. Here's the side by side. All I ever saw were those gross marks. I'm like, those are subclass. You cannot make sufficient agreement. It's like, so like in their expert was just of the mindset, you have to show your work. Like this concept that you can't use the photos. He's like, there's entire databases out there that law enforcement use all the time of photos,
right,
that is accessed and used by law enforcement in order to try to find sufficient agreement between a weapon and rounds, you know? So it was insane. Absolutely insane.
Was there any testimony that came out either through cross-examination or the defense expert regarding the bullet to indicate that at best the sufficient agreement would be any Glock 40 caliber?
I mean, you know, and I was critical about plenty that came in or didn't come in through the defense. And like, I don't think that they hammered that point home. Like who's the person who's saying that at any Sig Sauer that was made in 2001 would make the exact same marks? Where's the comparison with 10 other Sigs, 40 right. caliber?
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah.
Right. No, none of that. It never came out. Like none yeah. of that, that, how do you rule that out? If you're talking about subclass and then individual like characteristics, it's just, man, it was a frustrating trial in a lot of different ways.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with washablesofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life.
Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So from my perspective, that firearm analysis of that bolt is bullshit. Like that is nothing to point towards Richard Allen. Doesn't sound like the video does anything to point towards Richard Allen. Nothing identifies him there. So then there's the frustrating part is the element of evidence that was the most damning, and from what I understand, probably the reason he got convicted were these confessions. But at what point there's a fruit of the poisonous tree idea happening here, because the only reason he's in jail is because of this shell casing. Is that correct? Is that accurate?
Yeah.
It's the only reason he was arrested was solely based off of that.
Right.
And then while he's in jail, after a year and being in solitary confinement, having a complete mental breakdown, he's in psychosis, he's on medication, then he starts confessing, and the confessions become, it has to be the reason he's convicted, are these confessions.
Right. It's the key piece of evidence.
Yeah. And it didn't come in. That wasn't the evidence they used to arrest him. And that's, I think that's a critical point for people, because I think people get caught up in the weeds of, you know, was the confession legit? Was it like the confession was not, this was not evidence when you took the bullet casing and the video and the confession, the police put all that together and decided that's our guy, we're arresting him. They arrested him based solely off the shell casing that is not legit evidence, in my opinion. And then a year later, after he's already arrested, then these confessions come out. Do you think there's any legal standing in the appellate process for the fact that can, because I have to imagine the defense must have filed a motion to suppress those confessions prior to trial.
They did, and it was, I don't know how to describe it. They tried to do it like globally, because there were, like, we didn't hear 60, like people keep throwing out that number, 61 confessions. I don't know if they're recounting, like we heard 9 phone calls total.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw statements that were written by somebody else of things that they're claiming that Richard Allen said,
mm-hmm.
which we'll get into when we dig into these confessions a bit more. But like, I don't know if they're like in a phone call where he tells Kathy, I did it. Kathy, I did it. You know, if he says it 4 times in one call, if they're considering that to be 4 different confessions.
Right, right.
I consider that to be one. Well, you know, because there's 700 hours of phone calls, and we hear a total of like 10 minutes of like these things that they cherry picked out where, you know, they're claiming that he's confessing. And I mean, he's definitely saying words like, I did it. Like, in the probably the most powerful confession is a call to his mother, where he's like, you know, and because like they were always saying, no, they're messing with your head, honey. Mm-hmm. Like both her mom and Kathy, they're like, they're messing with your meds. Like something's going on. You're not right in your head. He's like, well, he's like, but I did it, you know, to his mother. He's like, well, she's like, no, you didn't, honey. He's like, well, I wouldn't say I did it if I didn't. You know, but like in all of these things, he's like, well, it seems like I did it. You know, he'll say right. these things where you just can tell.
Well, I saw on one of the news broadcasts I was watching about it, and they were talking about one of the ones with Kathy, and he's like the quote from the transcript was, I did it. And she's like, no, you didn't. He said, I think I did it.
Right.
And so that was when I was hearing all that, I was like these are not, Janet and I talked about a lot in one of our follow-ups. Was the one confession for me, just in like I heard third hand from you all who heard it also secondhand, was the confession with the prison psychologist. And the only reason was, as I was listening to all the coverage of the case, as I was hearing about all these confessions, I was seeing transcripts of the phone calls coming out. The thing I kept saying over and over again to someone who does a lot of work in statement analysis was, I haven't heard a confession. I did it is not a confession.
No. Correct.
I need to hear, like what I haven't heard is a narrative confession with a beginning, middle, and end that fits with the evidence. And particularly, it fits with some any evidence that is unknown to anyone but the killer. Haven't heard any of that. So I was already in my, I'm not there. I'm just hearing a third, but it's like, if that's it, if that's him saying I did it, I think I did it. No, fuck you. That doesn't count. Like, that's not a confession.
Right.
But then I heard, well, then the prison psychologist comes in and says that he told me that he met him out there. His intention was to rape them and he took him down and he did something with the gun and that's where the bullet came from. And then he saw this van and he got spooked and then he ended up just killing him. And that's why he left. And that was, and what I, the way I put it to Janet at that point was, that is the only thing that has my interest.
Right.
Because that is a confession. If, and the caveat there is, that is a confession if that's what he said without prompting and without leading, which we don't know.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, we know that he was in this state of psychosis. He was, eating his own feces and drinking out of the toilet and doing all this stuff. He was not in his right mind. But still, as someone who does, does statement analysis, I'm like, that doesn't make you know things that you shouldn't know. Right. So it's still legit. But then it comes out that this prison psychologist has been on these Reddit groups and she's on Facebook and she's talking about this stuff. There's the whole thing about the van, whether there was a van, whether there wasn't a van. And that, obviously that comes up in there. So can we talk about the psychologist's confession here? I know I heard you live about it, but if we can just kind of concisely talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, so it comes out, and I had first heard from Monica Walla. The first time they had her on the stand was in June of 23, when they tried to get him out the first time, tried to get the safekeeping order removed, because that was the guise under which they were keeping him in solitary, which they like to call a one-man cell.
Right.
No, he wasn't confined. In solitary. He was in a one-man cell for his safety. So it turns out, and so my diggers went and started digging immediately. So Monica Walla was a part of Gray Hughes, the murder sheet, in June of 2022. So months before Alan is even arrested. Like, she's a part of, and these are all pro guilt, Alan's the guy groups. And so she's a part of
this nine. Facebook we're talking about?
These are on Facebook groups, which are very, very active Facebook groups. I mean, they're the equivalent of Reddit, with probably a little less brain power, so like it's some of these Facebook groups. But so by the time that she finds out that Richard Allen is going to be her patient, she's knee deep into eight groups. She joins my group, the Defense Diaries group, on the day of the safekeeping hearing. So after she testified, she came back home and then she joined our Facebook group. All right. So, and then there's this comment that she makes where she talks about the content she listened to. She talks about Gray Hughes investigates, and she talked in Gray Hughes, like this whole thing with Gray Hughes. Like, apparently the other night he just deleted like 1,000 videos from his channel. Because this guy was big on the timeline, and there's this comment that's been floating around that he made in somebody else's chat where he's talking about, oh, just wait until you hear about the van. Like, so this is like before anybody knows anything about this. So, and like just the whole concept of this van was always a thing that was talked about. Like, it had been out there, and when you kind of break down this thing, and the problem with Walla, aside from the fact that she was accessing, databases that aren't available to the public to look up Kagan Klein and see what he was arrested for and try to dig in, she's investigating the case.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem with her is that she destroyed all of her handwritten notes. So the only thing you're seeing is what she ended up typing into the system. So she didn't keep any of her handwritten notes, which is unbelievable. And when they put on, the defense put on their expert, Dr. Westcott, who was a I thought, an incredible witness. She was, you know, she was of the mindset that, look, I've been doing this for an awful long time, and I have never in my career seen anybody that has written kind of their soap notes in this fashion, where like you're typically jotting down what people say, just kind of like, oh, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
But when you're reading this thing that you talked about, kind of this narrative with a beginning, a middle, and an end, she's like, that's not what psychologist notes look like. Like if he's saying things, you're jotting them down. Like this thing, she's like, was like a narrative form. And I've never seen a doctor write anything like that. At least mm-hmm. like a psychologist, it's just not how it's done. And I think that the takeaway from Walla is like, how can you trust, like anybody who's, again, being intellectually honest and think that that's ethical for a psychologist, like she should have disclosed immediately that she was way too involved with this case, way too involved with the facts of the case. Cause it's different. It's different than when you have a convicted felon and they're receiving psychological treatment in prison, and a psychologist becomes familiar with the facts of the case. That's a different situation than when you have a pretrial detainee who is allegedly in there for suicide watch. She's claiming that she's saying, don't talk about the case, but we don't have any proof of that, you know? And then she's in these groups where they're talking about all this shit. And, you know, you have this thing where the thing about the gun, like, yeah, I did something with the gun and I dropped the bullet and something happened with the bullet. Like that would have had to have been up on the bridge, which means that it's not the bullet or the round that they found down by the crime scene. Because if you really start breaking down this narrative with facts that he shouldn't know, none of it adds up.
Well, the bullet thing was the one thing that jumped out at me, was that's so nonspecific, and it sounds like someone trying to explain an item of evidence, but not knowing how.
Right.
Because like I would expect to hear something like, I racked the gun to try to scare them.
Right.
Not, I did something with the gun and that's why the bullet fell out.
Right. And that's exactly the words that she used. I did mm-hmm. something with the gun. That sounds like somebody who's never fired a weapon and doesn't know what the term racked means.
Right.
Because Richard Allen would certainly know. He'd say, I would have racked the gun. I racked it. The round popped out. And that's how the round got there.
Well, and what I would want to know
but the timing of it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Because like, and then she claims that he used the term, I was lying in wait. There's no fucking way that Richard Allen would have used the words, I was lying in wait for the girl. Like, and then when they came, because like the story went like this. I was at my mom's in Peru. Like, this is the whole narrative. I was at my mom's that morning in Peru. I went to go visit my parents. My sister came by. They wanted to go have lunch. I wasn't interested. I left. I went and I picked up a 6-pack of beer. I drank 3 of the beers. I drank 3 of them later, but not at the same time. It was a nice day. I went to the house. I decided I was going to go out to the trails. I bundled up. I went out and he says, I parked the car, and then it just jumps to like, I was lying in wait. I was lying in wait. And that 2 girls walked by me. I followed them onto the bridge. I did something with the gun. The bullet falls. I tell them down the hill.
Oh, so he said he did something with the gun and the bullet falls before he told them down the hill.
Right.
But then the bullet's found down by the bodies.
Right. I should have brought my notes. I have because I wrote it all down. But I think that happens before down the hill. I think down the hill mm-hmm. is like the last, like after the something with the gun and the bullet, something happens with the bullet. And so then it's like, and then I tell him down the hill. We're going, like my intent was to sexually assault them. As we're going down the hill, I see a white van. I get scared. I cut the girls' throats. I cut their necks. I put a few sticks on them. I think he said the sticks thing. And then he said, I stayed off the trails. I made my way back to my car. And then I went and lived my life.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like nearly the narrative that I, you know, as an interviewer, I would be, if somebody's, even the thing with, I did something with a gun. Obviously, I want to know what, but you know, what I would be wanting to probe at is, what precisely did you do and why? A guilty person should be, the person that actually did that should be able to tell you what you did and why. And we don't have any of that.
Or any real details.
Yeah.
Like saying I saw a van, like how did you get them across the creek? When did you have them take their clothes off? Like when did all the, like anything that really, like all of that at this point, when he makes that statement, the discovery had been dropped off. So like Brad and Andy had dropped off thousands of pages of the document. So he had access to it. So that's why the van became, in the state's estimation, the smoking gun, because that's the one thing they claim that wasn't in the discovery. He had no way to know about the van. He could have known about everything else. If he knew about everything else, why didn't he include any of those details?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like just where they're found, how they got there, you know, and like the way that the state tried to tie it together is by surprising everybody in the courtroom by calling this Brad Weber guy, who's the guy whose Sig Sauer was tested, his 40 caliber Sig Sauer, and could not be excluded, whose property is the property where that access road is, who is just like, who lost his shit the first time he was on the stand when the state called him and on a cross-examination, because he had originally told a Fed and another cop from Hammond that I didn't come straight home from work. Like I had gone to service my ATM machines after work that day, because I hadn't serviced them in 3 days, and I typically do it daily. I was out of town. So he changes his story by the time he's testifying. So like when they decide, and they, like you have to put together the pieces of this puzzle in terms of how the state put this together, because they have Weber with knowing that he had made this statement to this Fed. Okay, that said that he didn't come straight home from the Subaru plant, because they put the timeline together that it was Weber got off of work at 2:02. He's supposed to work until 2:30, but you know that he makes it out to his car. It's about a 25-minute ride, and that the timing of the last movement of Libby's phone is at 2:32, and that's exactly when Weber's driving onto his property from that day, from leaving work. So now you've got this issue where he's already made a statement to a Fed way back, like early on. Like, I didn't go straight home from work. I went and serviced my ATMs. He owns like 30 or 35 ATMs. Mm-hmm. You know, he puts in gas stations, like, you know, not the bank ones, the ones you see where you pay the exorbitant service charge.
Right.
Well, like, you know, so he's changed his story completely. So when they try to impeach him on it, like Gull shuts it down. So then, and he gets super upset.
What do you mean Gull shuts it down? What happened when they tried to impeach him?
She shut it down. She said it was improper impeachment, and that, you know,
I was impeaching with a prior statement.
Dude, like you're right.
I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but
you follow it enough to know you can impeach somebody with a ham sandwich, man. Period.
Yeah, a defense cross examination bringing up a prior statement for impeachment is perfectly within their rights. And she said no.
She said right. She said no. So then they do a TUI request to get that Fed who's down in Texas to come testify, because it was his report. So because she's like, I'm like, but like you can use hearsay, like you can use anything to impeach, as long as there's a prior inconsistent statement.
Right.
So her shutting it down. So then they're like, they did the TUI request. He's like, I'll come, you know, like the Fed said he can come testify to this. So it turns out he has some kind of medical problem that he can't fly on a plane. So then the defense, this is during trial, after they were surprised with Brad Weber testifying, like he was on the list, but they had no idea he was coming out with this van shit,
right,
changing the story. That I came straight home from work.
Yeah.
So they had the way to impeach him, and then, but she wouldn't allow it to be used, just the report. So, because Baldwin was the one trying to impeach him with the report, and you know, and it's like, once he tried to refresh his recollection, and the dude's like, I didn't say that. It's like, what are you going to do? You've got to get the cop there or the Fed there. So yeah. He can't fly. We're in the middle of trial. So they file a motion to see if he can testify via Zoom because of his medical condition. Because it literally could be a life or death. Like he'll die.
Yeah.
Could die if he flew. And she's like, nah, no Zoom. So we never hear from this Fed. So they really don't have this guy come. So the van story just kind of stands the test of time because they had no way to refute it because Gaul wouldn't allow for them to examine this guy via Zoom, which, you know, typically I agree with. Like you need people in person on the stand. You have to be able to make sure that, you know, you're able to observe them. You want to make sure that somebody's not standing behind the computer screen, you know, holding up cue cards with shit that you're saying. You know what I mean? You're not allowed to sit there and just read things when you're testifying. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons why you want people in court, but this is an extenuating circumstance and you have a guy's like life on the line here, you know, and it's like
a federal law enforcement officer. It's not just a schmo.
Right. You know, so it's like, so that whole thing, you know, and you look at that van thing becoming the most important piece of evidence for the state that they just really couldn't rebut because that becomes like to the words that you said are exactly what the defense was presented with in terms of a problem because that little narrative is really the only thing that had any legs in terms of a confession. You know, so, and if you inject this van thing and you have no way to rebut it because she's not allowing the Fed who heard it and wrote it down that the guy said he didn't come home. But so then the way that they tried to work around it is that after Allen makes this alleged confession to Walla and they finally, because Nick McClellan, after he hears about it, like how did Nick McClellan find out about the van thing? Like, because like this is all in Allen's medical records. This all right.
McClellan's a prosecutor.
Right. Yeah, he's a prosecutor. Like how is he catching wind that he's made this statement to a doctor? So he immediately, so he does his second, third, and fourth request for Allen's medical records from the prison. And so he didn't even have them at that point. And so when they finally get the records, that's when Steve Mullins, who is the prosecutor's investigator, who used to be the former chief of police for Delphi, doesn't record the call. He calls Weber and claims, they says, hey, we need to re-interview you. We need you to come in here. And so Mullins claims, I didn't say anything about anything. It wasn't like, oh, we need to know. We want to talk to you about what time you came home or what you were driving that day or anything like that. And then he comes in and in the written statement. So when they get Weber on cross, Weber says, oh, well, before I went to, because Andy asked him, he's like, how did you know what car you were driving that day? Because he's like, you either drive your Subaru, which is what you typically drive, right? Or you know, on occasions where you have to pick something up, you'll take the van. He's like, yeah. He's like, well, before I went in and talked to them, I went on my phone and I was able to figure out which vehicle I was driving. So the significance of that is that Mullen lied on the stand. Like, so this is before, how would he know? Because the way that Andy put it, he's like, well, you know what's interesting is that Mullen is claiming that he testifies that he didn't tell Brad Weber anything about what they were going to discuss. Yet for whatever reason, Brad Weber took it upon himself to go back in time years to investigate, to try to figure out what vehicle he was driving that day before he goes in and talks to Mullen for this later interview.
When he supposedly has no idea what they're going to be asking him.
Right. So obviously he knew exactly what, and they're like, is there, you know, like Mullen was like, is there any way you could prove it? Like, you know, he's like, yeah, well, I should be able to look at my phone. I'm like, what about his phone is telling him that what car?
Did he explain that?
No.
Brad Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
So, the last thing I want to touch on there, and I want to get in some final thoughts here to wrap this up. But you mentioned Weber's gun. So the round that was found at the scene, the tool marks were also compared to Weber's gun.
Correct.
And
it could not be excluded.
So you've got Richard I'm about to lose my shit here, and not because I think, oh, that must mean that this Weber guy is guilty, but how does the jury not see by, how does anybody not see past the fact that they're saying Richard Allen's gun can't be excluded, and then they test it against one other fucking gun and it can't be excluded either? What does that tell you? That it's not that it's bullshit. It means nothing.
Right.
It means junk. Absolutely fucking nothing.
Right. It's absolute shit.
And that's back to that fruit of the poisonous tree thing. Is there a world, and this is way above my pay grade to understand, in the appellate process afterward, is there a world where it could be appealed with any kind of decent probability of being successful, that anything that happened after he was arrested based on this tool mark on the gun shouldn't have been included in the trial?
Well, yeah, I mean, the way that they're going to have to go about it, you know, because they tried to suppress the round. Well, they actually tried to suppress the search of the house.
Uh-huh.
Okay, but that was part and parcel of the Franks.
Yeah.
Like, what they should have really done, like, just in terms of procedurally how it went, it could be messy, man. You know, because there were certain, the way that they attacked kind of globally all of the confessions, and instead of like pinpointing each confession and saying, okay, this is why we're trying to suppress this one. I mean, Brad's argument's a good one, that it was the conditions of his confinement were the equivalent of an overzealous interrogation, where you typically can make the involuntary argument. So they're saying that this wasn't, you know, like shining a light in his face, making him sweat. That's like, and it's going to be the same problem with the round. Like they try to suppress it. In Indiana, they don't do Daubert or Fry. like they which, and if you guys don't understand, like, so those are both Supreme Court cases, and they're used to challenge scientific evidence that one or the other side is trying to bring in.
Right.
It's like you put experts on to say, okay, this is why it's valid science, and this is why it has value to a jury. In Indiana, they don't really file either of those. They let it go. They let the thing come in, and they let it go to weight as opposed to admissibility. So
there's no world in Indiana where there's a Frye hearing and they say, no, this isn't legit science. It's not coming in. That's just not a thing in Indiana.
Not really a thing in Indiana. It's crazy. It goes to weight, not admissibility. So in terms of, you know, them trying to keep the round out, it was really, they had to try to keep the gun out, the cert, because you can't really keep it out. You're not going to be able to keep the round out. I mean, ultimately, this thing, if it makes it, like, it'll get probably denied because of the appeal, on the direct appeal, because of the confessions.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're going to say, well, the weight of the confessions, whatever mistakes Gull made, which were myriad,
yeah,
in terms of other decisions, they're going to say none of those things, had she made the proper decision, would have outweighed the strength of those confessions to the jury.
Right.
So, like, that's what their mindset will be. So then if it gets up to the Supreme Court level in Indiana, so, but like the problem with, you know, the confessions being just like the weight of them, is that it might turn everything else into harmless error, you know. But like, again, with the Supreme Court, what you're hoping is that they're going to realize that we cannot allow in this country for pretrial detainees to be kept in those conditions in order to extract confessions out of them, because there's no doubt that's what happened. I mean, like, I was starting to get into it like a little too early, but like, I kind of wanted, we could wrap it on this thought. And it's really, you know, if you can imagine, if you could try to put yourself in a place where you've never had any experience with law enforcement, you've never been in the system, you've never been arrested, you've certainly never been in jail. And then all of a sudden one day, you know, they take you into custody and they then cut you off from everybody that would be considered support for you. They put you in solitary. They shut him down from communicating with his wife of 35 years. But it's beyond that. He went in diagnosed with major depressive disorder and anxiety, not after the crime. This is from childhood. Like, the doctor Westcott called him a fragile egg. And that he also has this dependency disorder where he needs constant reaffirmation from Kathy. He's like, I'm worthless. So it's like, I'm not a good person. Like, I'm useless. I'm no good to you. Like, and she needs to constantly, throughout their entire marriage, he's always been like that. He's like a very passive guy. He's not an aggressive dude. So you can imagine when you're put into that situation in a cell for 23 hours a day, and they cut you off from all communication with the one person that you need most in the world to be able to operate psychologically on any kind of normal level. And then 5 months in, like, he did not see her for 7 months from the date of arrest until, oddly enough, right after the confession stop, that's when Kathy Allen finally gets to come to the prison. So like, the timing of it, like, the appellate lawyers are going to have to lay it out for what it was. This wasn't necessarily, we're torturing Richard Allen and saying, you know, like, I mean, psychologically, they were fucking with that guy every day. Baby killer, baby killer, baby killer, admit you did it. Just tell us, you did, you know, like, all that shit went on for sure. But what it really was, at the end of the day, after the involuntary Haldol shots for 3 months, it's the carrot. It's like, hey, man, do you want to see your wife? Do you want all this bullshit to end? Just say that you did it, dude. Like, just say that you did it.
It's like it's like an expanded version of how the Reed technique works.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you put them into a position and then you offer them the way out.
Right.
And it seems like they've done that.
You want to get transferred out. Like, we still have no idea to this day why he was transferred out of Westville to Wabash. Like the fucking Colts moving out of Baltimore, like when he, like, in the middle of the night in the trucks, it was like one day Richard Allen's moved out of Westville and put in a prison 200 miles away without a court order. There's no explanation as to how it happened or why it happened. But like when you look at these kind of things in terms of what they did to get this guy to start talking, because there's always the counter argument. Well, I mean, if he's in psychosis, couldn't he be telling the truth? I guess. But when you look at the strength of that case or weakness of it, like if you strip those confessions away and you're left with an unspent casing and you're left with three or four individuals who saw somebody on the bridge, none of which were able to identify Richard Allen as the person that they saw in court. And you've got nothing else other than him saying he was out at the bridge that day. I mean, is that enough for you to convict somebody of a double homicide? I mean, in my world, it's not. Like, I wish that I was able to feel comfortable with this verdict. I want the girls to have justice. I wish that I felt like they got the right guy, that I felt really secure about it. I do, you know, but I could just tell you, I think that it was a catastrophic mistake by the defense not to put Kathy Allen on the stand, mm-hmm. to testify. Like, they just never put Rick anywhere that day, ever, you know? And I know exactly what Kathy would have testified. She told me. I asked her, I'm like, where was Rick when you got home? She's like, he was asleep on the couch when I got home from work at 4:15. I mean, I'm like, all right, so a dude who just committed a horrific double homicide comes home and just crashes on the couch, takes a nap. Doesn't seem like, I don't know, maybe, is that, you know, I'm like, did he leave that night? I'm like, who does the wash? Like, were there any clothes in the washing machine or in the dryer? Because she's like, I do the wash. She's like, no. And like, I'm like, did he act different in any way? Like now in retrospect, is there anything that like stuck out to you? Like over the 5 years where you're like, oh shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, none of that exists. And I asked her flat out. I'm like, Kathy, this is like on a phone call after he's convicted. I'm like, is there any part of you deep to like, no one knows this man better than Kathy Allen does.
Right. They've
been together since they were 19. He's never done any, like, I'm like, is there any part of you in the deepest recesses of your mind and or heart that thinks that Rick did this? She like instantaneously, she's like, no, she's like, he's not capable of it. He's like, there's no way he could have done this. He couldn't have. Like, it's just not in his DNA. It's not who he is. He's a really passive guy. Like, it's just such a weird case, man. Cause none of like all the things that you look at about it just don't add up. Like he's not that dude. Like he's never like, there's nothing like creepy about him. Like, where's all the shit where you don't build up to committing a double homicide or going out and deciding that you're going to rape two girls and just like all of a sudden one day without building up to it.
Right.
Like whether it's through online shit or whatever you're doing, like there's just none of that indicia here to where I'm like, all right, it kind of makes sense. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. It's a frustrating case, man, and it's going to be a long battle.
Well, this is what I want to do here. We're going to go and wrap this up. I know you got your cleaning folks that need to get in there, and I got some stuff I got to do today. I do have, there were several questions came in from the chat. I'm going to address those when we record our follow-up on this, which will be not this coming Tuesday, but the following Tuesday when we'll do our follow-up. I'll reach out to you, Bob, about times, but if you're, I don't know, you usually do your lives on Tuesday nights, don't you?
I typically go live every day at some point, but I'm flexible, man.
Because what I would love to do is, you know, because we obviously we're an hour and 20 minutes in and we barely scratched the surface on this, but there's a lot of these specific questions, a lot of questions that I think that you specifically could answer. So if we can arrange it, I'd like to have you come on the follow up with us so you can answer those questions directly.
100%.
So I'll shoot you a text for the time.
I'll have my notes. I'll bring my notes. Awesome. That way I can reference stuff and.
Perfect. I'll text you with the time, but it's going to be, again, not this coming Tuesday, but next Tuesday. And we start at 7 o'clock my time. So 6 o'clock your time. So I'll get you all that information. We're going to bring Bob back on to the follow-up. We're going to try to make that happen to answer. And I've saved your questions, Valeria and Ann and Susan and Jen to make sure that we have those questions available for the follow-up. Bob, thank you not only for coming on and spending time today, but man, God bless you for taking the time that you took to be at that trial every day. So that we at least have some information. I know this case is near and dear to a lot of our hearts. So the only reason we have this information is because you spent the time and energy to be there every day. So thank you very much. Everybody check out the Defense Diaries podcast. Check out their podcast, the podcast and the YouTube channel with Bob and his very talented wife, Allie. They do a fantastic job. And Bob, thanks again.
Of course, brother. Always.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music for Season 15 is created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kay Wood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slip covers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.